Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Carrie Duart, who is a partner at PwC, leading their workforce of the future services. And she's also a director on PwC's board. Hi, Carrie. How are you doing?
Doing well, Adrian. Thank you for having me today.
You're very welcome. Now, so Carrie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and also a little bit about the work that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So at PwC, I have those two roles that you mentioned. I'm leading our workforce of the future services, which is where we're helping our clients really enhance and drive workforce productivity in this digital age. Mm-hmm. And two of the things we're really focused on are around digital upskilling and putting humans first in this digital world, and how we're helping organizations drive real business impact and real learning and helping their workforce evolve with regard to digital upskilling. So finding that fascinating. And the other piece of that that also comes into play is around diversity and inclusion, which really helps to drive, again, workforce productivity, innovation, and weighs in heavily into that digital upskilling. So those are two very, I'll say, popular topics within our Workforce of the Future platform.
Absolutely.
My second role is that I'm a director on the board of PwC, which also gives me oversight and visibility into our own firm's strategy and journey, as we have been going heavy on our digital upskilling for our own organization and changing the way we work for at least 3 years now, as well as our efforts around diversity and creating that really inclusive workforce. So those two lenses give me the visibility and oversight from our own organization, as well as, you know, what's happening in the market and how we're helping organizations drive real change.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. Now, the reason we agreed to get together and have a chat today was that PwC has recently published a new piece of research called Tech at Work, which sort of explores a lot of these issues that you've been talking about. And I took a look at that and I was like, that's cool. I mean, there's some real parallels and some interesting sort of findings in there, but rather than me kind of babbling on about the report, I mean, can you tell me a little bit about it, sort of how it came about, and so some of the big headlines that you found out from the report?
Would love to, and I'm glad you found it so interesting and exciting. So our PwC, the Global Survey on Tech at Work, it takes a closer look at the views of about 12,000 people from Canada, China, Hong Kong, Germany, India, Mexico, the UK, and the US. And they shared their views about digital tools that they use in their daily work. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things that I liked about it was, you know, we heard from all generations in the workforce, with C-suite titles, and all the way to administrative roles, and from a range of industries, including consumer markets, health industries, financial services, as well as technology and media and manufacturing. Mm. And so it's part of our series of consumer intelligence series that we really focus on enabling greater insight into consumer and executive attitudes and behaviors in this rapidly changing technology landscape.
Right.
So that's kind of in a nutshell what is covered and what you'll find in the survey.
Okay. And of all those kind of findings, I mean, were there any, I mean, there's two things I wanted to ask you about. One is that it was, because it was a global study, mm-hmm. did you find any sort of geographical differences across the piece that's worth kind of mentioning? And also, were there any findings in particular that you went, wow, didn't expect that. That's interesting.
Yeah, great question. Because I think we thought we might find greater geographic differences.
Right.
But we actually found some really common themes.
Okay.
And, you know, a couple of which are that organizations have been spending millions on technology, but then they're not getting the bang for their buck.
Right.
And what we're finding is it's because they're often not thinking about the workforce that needs to adopt and adapt to that technology. And that's how to get the bang for the buck on that technology if the workforce is really ready to use and leverage it.
Right.
So some of the findings that we said, well, what's driving that?
Mm-hmm.
And we found about four key themes.
Okay.
One is that the first is leaders are saying they're choosing technology with the people in mind, but the employees don't agree with that.
Mm.
And so I think that's interesting that the C-suite thinks like we got this, we're in touch with the workforce, but the workforce is saying there's such a disconnect mm-hmm. on there. So I think that is interesting, and we go in and we explore that a little bit.
Okay. So what was the other themes?
The other thing is that the second is that people really want this digital skills training. Employees that were surveyed are saying they would love to spend up to 2 days per month on training to upgrade their own digital skills if offered by the employer.
Right.
But what they were saying is that not only am I not being offered it, they're saying I often am spending my own time trying to digitally upskill myself, and it's not even necessarily acknowledged and validated, let alone rewarded. So it also goes to like the human experience that, you know, you don't necessarily need to reward with compensation everything that people do, that there are a lot of folks out there who are self-motivated.
Sure.
And all it might take is a little bit of acknowledgement, encouragement, and support, and they may do a lot of this on their own.
Yeah, so
I think that was the second. And I'll walk you through the last two. The third is also about the employee experience with the technology at work.
Right.
And what we found is that employees value both the human touch, but they also like the digital assist. And there are certain things within their work life experience that they prefer to be digitally accessible because they can do it on their own time, when they want, where they want. On call, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other pieces that they are looking for the human touch, like things around discussions around the performance and rewards or personal situations that have to be addressed.
Mm.
So there's a mix. And so it's not necessarily that you want to go all digital and all self-service for everything, and that organizations similarly don't poo-poo the impact of technology and how it may be welcomed and embraced by the employees. And thinking for your organization, where are those points where the human touch really is important? And where might technology not only help efficiency, but actually be appreciated?
Sure.
So I think that was interesting.
Okay.
And then the last piece was around efficiency and status driving interest in advancing skills. This was so fascinating, and we have really appreciated this, and it's really helping the clients that we're working with, which mm-hmm. is that we find that employees can and workforce can be bucketed almost into three groups as we think about digital upskilling. There are those that are naturally curious, right? And that's that group that I talked about earlier, that all you need to do is almost get out of the way, and to the extent that you can give them and make it even easier for them to upskill and apply their learning, they're all over it. They're going to go for it.
Sure.
The second group, as you think about how do you motivate the workforce,
mm-hmm.
they are really incented not just by natural curiosity, but it's really around reward and incentive. And for that group of the workforce, they have to see that it's going to further promotion, compensation, further their careers.
Yes.
And then there is another about third of the workforce that, truth be told, is just reluctant. And those folks may take spoon feeding, pushing to really embrace becoming more digital. And some of them may not be up for the challenge or up for the ride. But even acknowledging those kind of three distinct groups and what motivates people, and thinking about how do we think about our workforce, and then how do we really incent, drive, and inspire folks to come on this journey with us. And that's been helpful in tactical, practical situations as we head down this path with organizations.
I think that's fascinating around the different styles, because I mean before this call I was mentioning that back in the early days of my career I was trained as a teacher, and it sort of makes me think about almost like different you know, we talk about different personalities and different characters, but also different learning styles. I mean, it seems that you,
exactly, you described
kind of almost like there's the self-starters who are the super curious ones, and they'll just run around and do the thing. You just have to get out of their way, give them some guide rails and get out of their way. Then there are the reward seekers that go, you know, it's like an input output type of thing. It's like, if you want me to put in, then tell me what I'm going to get out, and that's fine. And that's okay. I mean, because that's just the way that they operate. And then there's the other people.
Just have them get motivated.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the other people, which is, I've just written down sort of need instruction. And they probably split into probably two further subgroups, which is need instruction because they just need to be told A, B, C, this is what you need to do. And they want certainty. They want a clear path. They want almost the training wheels, as it were, in order to get them help them get going. And then there's other ones that are just reluctant because they don't really like kind of change. They don't deal with that particularly well. I think it's fascinating because actually that kind of throws in a degree of, if you like, complexity and variety to many of the challenges that organizations are facing. I mean, because a lot of organizations are talking about, oh, we need to move to become more of a self-managing and adaptable and agile organization. But they're almost making those come with possibly generalized assumptions about how people are. And maybe that sort of goes a long way towards explaining why some of these big programs, these change programs, don't work, because they haven't taken into account the variety that exists in people.
That's exactly right. And it may sound like it brings complexity. It also helps to bring some clarity and a path forward. To your point around, it explains why change might not be working in some organizations. Putting this lens on it and saying, well, what type of employees do I have? And understanding what motivates them, once we understand that, then we can work to push the levers and do the things that incent and, you know, drive or inspire some of the change in behavior.
Absolutely. And I think the thing is that I think there's an interesting nuance around the word complexity, because a lot of people use the word complexity to imply it's confusing. But actually complexity viewed another way could just mean that it's a bit more sophisticated than you think and will require a more sophisticated approach to work.
Yeah. Well said.
Thank you. Brilliant. That's super interesting. I wanted to actually ask you about some particular things that when I read the report, I found them and I was like, wow. Okay, let me ask Carrie about those.
Okay. Terrific. Love it.
So okay. I was one of the first things out there that I saw, and I said I was surprised to read that you found that 73% of people surveyed say they know of systems that would help them produce higher quality work. And I looked at that and I was like, okay, but yet it seems that the many executives and leaders are not tapping into that collective intelligence of their employees. Can you give me a view on kind of like, or your view on what do you think is stopping them from doing that? Because that's like, you know, it's a bit like, you know, when they talk about many, many minds or many heads are better than one. I mean, that's like, you know, tapping into the collective intelligence, that just seems like a no-brainer to me.
It does, doesn't it? But it goes to historical way of running organizations and the hierarchical structure, and the people that are choosing the technology think that they know what the workforce needs, but it sounds, and this demonstrates, that they may not. And that also goes to one of our earlier points about one of the key takeaways is that executives think that they're choosing tech with their people in mind, but employees don't agree. This is a double click on that.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and I think it also speaks to that in so many organizations, employees don't feel that they necessarily have a voice, or that their voice matters, or that they're listened to, right? And so if you ask them, they'll say, oh yeah, I know something, but why would I bother? What's going to happen? Will anything come of it? And that's just such a common disconnect. And it's the leaders and the C-suite are doing their best, and they are trying to understand and choose what's best for the organization and the workforce, but there's this clear disconnect that when we do see that disconnect broken and that bridge built, it can be so powerful.
Mm. And building on that, there was the report then goes on to say that when you don't have a clear and accurate understanding of how your people use technology in their jobs and what they need and want from those tools, the overall experience people have at work can suffer. So you kind of what you kind of said is, and this big part of the report is like there is this experience gap in terms of what leaders and execs and C-suite people kind of think is happening, and then what people actually say is happening, and that gap really matters.
It does.
What do you think kind of decision makers should be kind of doing to build that better understanding of their employees' needs? I mean, is it like they should be adopting the old school management by walking about type of behavior, which seems to have get lost kind of in this modern kind of modern day?
Well, let me take it in two ways. One, just I'll talk you through how we think about it generally, but then can walk you through something really specific and tactical.
Okay.
I mean, first, just generally, leaders often have a hard time understanding what is it really like to do particularly staff-level jobs.
Right.
Especially if it involves new tech. So part of it is just encouraging our leaders to think about how can tech be incorporated into the employee's daily journey. You know, not necessarily the big bang system, but just it's everyday activities, transactions throughout a day. What is that like? What is that experience like? Because when you take away some of that friction, the impact on productivity and employee engagement can be quite exceptional.
Sure.
And, you know, related to that is discovering how is tech already woven into the employee's daily routine and touch point, both in and out of the office. Because what we also find is if you think about, we all have technology outside of the office and it's this wonderful consumer experience, intuitive. And then the number of people that then go into work and quote technology is clunky, clumsy, not intuitive, and certainly not a consumer experience. Bridging that disconnect is where some organizations are finding some real power again, and you know, get that excitement, improve the experience, and ultimately that productivity that folks are looking for. And to some of our discussion earlier around consumer experience, right? When the employees are engaged and they have their own great experience, the consumers notice that. And we've been finding that with some of the changes we're seeing. So that's kind of broadly.
Yeah.
I'm going to dive to a specific is, so how do we really get that, I'll call it ground up approach to innovation and also just productivity improvement, which is related to what technology really works.
Yes.
And this actually, so part of the sleuthing before this podcast today, I read some of your articles and I loved your March 18th article around 10 little things to improve and that little things matter, because this speaks to that. Well, 10 things to improve the employee experience. There's this concept, it's like citizen-led innovation, which is this whole concept of giving the workforce their voice.
Yes.
And what we have found is where we've been doing some digital upskilling and then giving the employees immediate opportunity to apply that learning in their jobs. One organization, as we help them with some deep training of some of their folks as they started to be able to do some bots, we said, think about what drives you nuts in your day-to-day interactions.
Sure.
And we gave people the opportunity to create bots to, you know, automate or take some of the pain out. It was amazing to see at this one organization the number of bots that were suddenly created to streamline the expense reporting policy.
There you go.
Right? And what we found is that each one of those bots took, let's say, a half hour a week out of each person's day. But when you multiply that by the tens of thousands times the, you know, 50, 52 we see here, it's those little things. First, from a productivity perspective, when you multiply that effect out, that's quite significant. But then what that also did is it gave a collective voice so that the leaders knew, you know, we should take a look at our expense system and policies and processes because there's something not right there. Like, what a great way to empower the employees to fix some things and have a voice. But then you also demonstrate your listening because you can see where a lot of the real pain points are from a technology perspective.
Sure.
So it's been so powerful for the workforce and the leaders.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I can remember sort of expense systems. I mean, I don't think expense systems are are just the bane of most people's kind of lives. And I am actually really quite thankful
that I don't have to wrestle with an expense system very often kind of these days. My own one is very
lucky simple. Man, the rest yeah, of
my,
us.
My, my own one is very simple. And I like it that way. But I think, so let me go back to the, so there's one last finding that I, that then stood out for me, and you've touched on it earlier. You talked about this idea that employees value the human touch at work, particularly in specific areas around maybe appraisals and catch-ups and those sort of things. And that seems to me, it mirrors what happens in customer experience. Many customers like digital tools, and they want to self-serve, but they want to speak to someone when things get complicated or are kind of meaningful or have a bit more importance. I mean, do you think actually, because I think that customer experience and employee experience are, I think employee experience is probably developing, it's sort of behind in the development development curve, vis-a-vis customer experience. But do you think there's a lot that people focusing on employee experience could learn from studying what happens in customer experience and what we've learned around what great customer experience looks like? Because it feels to me that it's almost slightly anathema that I call it the Jekyll and Hyde syndrome, in that we are customers for probably, you know, most of our lives, most of the hours in our lives, as it were, where we're sleeping and we're with friends and family and so on and so forth. And then we cross this threshold, which is the organizational boundary, and then we become these worker bees, and we seem to lose all connection with what it means to be a customer, like a human being using stuff. I find that an interesting Jekyll and Hyde type of transformation sometimes.
Isn't it? And it's so funny that we're just now starting to focus on it, although it sounds like you've been onto this for many years now. But the rest of the world is, we just, whether we call it customer experience or sometimes we call it the consumer experience.
Sure.
And an analogy that we often talk about is making a good pair of jeans.
Yes.
You know, a company, whether it's a technology system for their workforce or something for their workforce, they roll it out, they put all the time into change management, seems like it should be terrific, and then nobody uses it. It's like, well, did you actually give them a good pair of jeans, or did you design something that seems super snazzy to the designer, but actually when the people went to go try it on, it just wasn't fit for purpose?
Sure.
And so creating and thinking about everything we do and asking our employees to do, think about it from their perspective, and is it a positive consumer experience?
Mm-hmm.
Taking out the friction, ease of use, does it really help them get their job done in an easier way? That's when we see the employees really latch onto that technology, get excited, get engaged, and it does translate to a better customer experience as well, but we're also seeing the stats are starting to come in now that it's reducing employee turnover.
Yeah.
Right? It's increasing the engagement and the performance and ultimate productivity. So absolutely, where companies are onto that concept and thinking about employee experience as a consumer or customer experience, those are the organizations that are starting to pull ahead of the pack.
Awesome. So Carrie, let me ask you if you can spring down to sort of brass tacks or make it real, as it were, because this is sometimes research and findings can feel a little bit sort of abstract. I mean, can you give me a couple of examples of sort of companies that you think are kind of leading the way and what they've done and, you know, why they've done it kind of, and what, so that how they're benefiting kind of related to the findings that you've highlighted in your report? Because I think that makes it kind of real and gives people that are either listening into this or reading the highlights, they go, oh, there's somebody that I should be watching. There's somebody I should be learning from. I mean, apart from yourselves, obviously.
Obviously, right? Yes, I can. Let me walk you through a couple examples. You know, I can't give company names, but I can describe the situations for you.
Okay.
So one of the first, and a lot around this, you know, putting humans first in this digital world, but to really make technology effective and have it so that it's adopted and adapted to. There was actually a bank in in Africa that we were working with that did a whole rollout of new technology, and it just was rejected. And okay. Then they called us and they said, you know, what's going on? So we dug in and found that the employees are saying they were just afraid of failure. And right. sometimes we use the phrase, just click it. They were afraid to quote, just click it.
Right.
So in working with the leaders then went out, redid the roadshow, but talked about their own personal experience with technology and some of the failures and some of the risks that they took.
Yeah.
And making it okay for folks to quote, just click it and try it.
Mm.
And it was incredible, the increase in people that were just willing to try it.
Yes.
So I think that's a practical example. Another is that there is another organization that we're working with, recognizing that it's also not just the technical knowledge. And again, so much of what the workforce is thinking about, they're thinking through, do I trust my employer? Am I afraid of failure? And am I going to have to be coding bots, right, sure. to be able to really be relevant? And so several organizations we're working with are recognizing that and starting to create an experience that is digital, some digital employee experience, and to your earlier point, that's a consumer experience, around how people are learning.
Yes.
And that the learning is not just on the technical, but it's helping people understand that it's actually about, are you willing to try things?
Sure.
Do you have that open and curious mindset? Are you willing to behave and just click it and try new things?
Mm.
There's actually more than one organization that as they've been doing that and providing some, you know, the little digital fitness assessment, creating that experience, their workforce is becoming less afraid of trying new things. And they're finding when and as they're rolling out different technology, people are understanding that it's so much about mindset, behavior, and how we work.
Yes.
Even more so than just technology.
Right.
So I think that's another example that we've been finding to be, you know, real relevant and tactical. Is that in line with what you're looking for?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the first one I think was I thought was particularly interesting when you get leaders that go around. Well, when you discover you've got a culture that's afraid of failure, which might not necessarily be obvious on the surface, but actually that's just when you dig in, that's kind of when you find out these things. And there's a lot of organizations that are talking about this idea about failing fast and kind of learning and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. Let me share a little story with you. So there is a telephone exchange box in the square in the center of the town that I live in, Brighton. And about 18 months mm-hmm. ago, there was a piece of graffiti that was, I think this was allowed graffiti. Somebody painted a sort of a mural thing on this exchange box. And on the side of it, which I took a picture of it, I think it's brilliant. It says, it's written in graffiti letters. It says something like, dude, sucking at something is the first step towards getting kind of good at something.
What's that?
And
did you snap a picture? Do you have that?
I do have that. And that's
great.
And I'm going to, because I'm working on this new book idea, and I'm going to use mm-hmm. that picture in that, because what I want to do is to challenge kind of people with, you know, using that picture as a stimulus, is to think about the ideas like,
yeah.
when was the last time that you sucked at something?
Love that idea.
Because, you know, and whether that's in your work or kind of how you deal with kind of customers or your employees or your peers mm-hmm. or your team or so on and so forth. Because I think too often when we think about failing fast and learning and things and, you know, iterating and repeating and improving, et cetera, that's sort of in that agile sort of space. We talk to almost just too much about the work and not necessarily about the personal responsibility that comes with that. And also the relationships that we have with the people around us.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I love that example, and it's for two additional examples I'd love to just walk you through.
Okay.
I love them. One of them is for a very large aerospace and defense company mm-hmm. that has been working on automating some of its back office.
Sure.
What I loved about this story is, first, instead of just anointing the person who was going to lead this team on developing some automation for this function, they made it voluntary and said, who would like to volunteer? And they were actually surprised because it wasn't some of the traditional leaders of the group. It was someone relatively new, but who was so excited, who volunteered and brought such enthusiasm and excitement to it. And this person got the training and started to develop a bot.
Right.
But what was interesting is that the bot failed and failed fast.
Right.
And but what the team, what the business unit leader said was, what that did was there were several people on the team who were afraid of the technology and afraid of clicking and breaking it. And because it failed, it gave them almost permission and they got comfortable. They said, just try it out. We know it doesn't work. So try it. Tell us how it fails for you.
Yeah.
And it took 3 months of trying that bot. It kept failing and failing and failing and failing. But it brought the team together and they got so behind this stinking bot. And that then when it worked, the sense of excitement about how the team had done this together. And remember when we talked about those three groups of employees, the naturally curious, those that need to be instead of the reluctant, even the reluctant folks had started clicking and participating in the conversation and just trying it. So I love that concept of sometimes failing first and failing fast ultimately gets us to such a better outcome for the organization and can pull people together.
Yeah.
Right? So I love that story. The other one that I really like is it goes to the humans first. And, you know, you talk about you have to suck at something. To be willing to have the courage to suck at something, I think there also needs to be this sense of trust in an organization.
Absolutely.
And we haven't covered that too much today, but the trust gap in society and in organizations has never, I think it has never been as large as it is today. And so one of the things that in our own organization, we've been at this digital upskilling for about 3 years now, but one of the first things we did is before we dove into the technology, we said, we have got to focus on our culture. We have got to be clear that we are an organization of caring and trust, and that focus on that and being clear on what those behaviors are about how we demonstrate caring and how we're there for each other and how we try things and then we're there to catch each other if things don't work out so well. We stand behind and the impact that that had for our workforce's ability, I say, to relax our shoulders and trust and try and gave folks permission and to some extent the emotional capacity to handle the amount and pace of change.
Sure.
And we are so grateful that we took that time because then as we dove into the real technology and digital upskilling, people are doing it almost in this safer environment where they know that we have a mantra of no one's left behind. Everyone's going to have the opportunity.
Sure.
And that we're an organization of purpose and caring. And that is really enabling our team to approach this with more emotional commitment rather than the reluctant compliance that often comes with, we're rolling out new technology. You must do this. You must do that. Here's your checklist.
Yeah.
Instead, it's creating that culture capacity so that folks are a bit more operating from inspiration and excitement about what this could be and how our organization is keeping our workforce to help them to stay relevant, whether you're going to be at PwC or move on.
Sure.
These are skills for your future.
Perfect.
So I think those are also some practical examples about how do we improve the trust and get our workforce to be excited, inspired, and just willing to try.
Yes.
To work differently.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Carrie, I know we've covered a lot of ground kind of in the last half hour. So, if I was to say to you, like, for somebody listening in or they're reading the highlights and they want to improve their, you know, the use of tech at work or the engagement with tech at work and just their overall employee experience, and you have to boil it down to give them your one best piece of advice, i.e. kind of like where to start, do this first, what would you say to them?
Well, hopefully one of the key themes is before just investing in new technology, take a step back and think about what does your workforce really need? What is their daily experience really like? And how are you ensuring that you're really reflecting that voice and experience of the employee and of the workforce as you're thinking about major technology investments?
Perfect. And finally, before we sort of wrap up and I shower you with thanks, is there anything else that you'd like to add that we've missed out?
Well, I can't wrap up without at least offering, as folks are thinking about this, we're here. We'd love to help start the conversation and turn this conversation into tactical action.
Yeah.
And prioritize steps to take.
Perfect. So, Carrie, I will make sure I get that all kind of linked up, point people to yourselves and also the Tech at Work report, and make sure people know how to get in touch with you. But on the back of that and what we talked about, I just wanted to say thank you so much for, one, the work that's gone into the Tech at Work report, and also sharing that with us and your take on it, and also all the stories that you've been able to share with us too. I mean, that's been great. So thank you so much.
So my pleasure, Adrian. And the report is at pwc.com/tech at work. Hope folks have found this valuable. I've loved the conversation, Adrian, and I love your passionate and interest and how you've been ahead of the curve before the rest of us caught up. So terrific to be here, and thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new. And I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswinsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.